I work, I'm not a surveillance study, so I'm sort of not on my home turf, so I'm a little nervous because of that. I work with net art and software art in the field of network and software studies, if you're familiar with this. And before my academic career, I actually had a career in quality assurance in a software company. So that's incredibly boring. And very, very far from conceptual art practices, sort of the gray within the gray media. But what I'll try to argue today is that we should pay more attention to this gray practice. The internet is changing, popular speaking, from a web of documents to a web of data, whose processes are becoming increasingly opaque. And my argument is that testing shows us something of that black box. But what does it show? The overall claim I will try to make is that there are different forms of testing that reveal different things about the black box, and also that these testing practices are used by contemporary artists to question the intrinsic mechanisms or logics that govern our digital reality. There's something to be learned from net and software arts testing of the black box. Something on testing. Software testers work to identify errors and malfunctions in a system. It can take many forms. Say, in user testing, you identify design flaws in the functioning, but other types of testing will identify delays in traffic by monitoring the flows of data packages and so on. And I will not have time to go into depth with this. But in the life cycle of systems development, testing is what creates safe and trustworthy technological ready-mades. So if our technological realm appears smart and smooth and real-time, it is not just because of smart algorithms and automations, but also because of testing, the many procedures of control and checking. Oh, there's user testing here. So what I will argue is that with testing as a principle for easing computational media, also comes a feeling of uneasiness. Things may go wrong. Things may not be right. Computational tools and services can be poorly designed. You can lose network connections. They are leaky. And you never know where your data ends. This can be biased. They can be biased and discriminating in unforeseen ways and so on, and are therefore regulated. So, in other words, testing relates to two kinds of uneasinesses. It seeks to maintain a smooth process in a situation where things could go wrong. It creates another type of uneasiness. The regulation that is needed to smooth and make easy is only acceptable insofar as we consider it just and fair. And underneath this is what you might call a position. So I want to now turn to an illustrative example from the history of computing of how code operates by law and how laws have a logic. And then I will turn to three examples from contemporary software and net art. In the 1940s, computing in the United States, computing was intrinsically linked to a military context in which any order given was an order executed, as explained by Wendy Chun. To make a computer work, a senior programmer or analyst would work to conceive a problem in mathematical terms, a programmer would work to specify how the machine should be coded, and finally, an actual coder would turn these specifications into documented machine code. While men were typically considered experts in the complex mathematics, women were generally seen as the ones who executed and could make all the details fit together while still keeping the big picture in mind. So the machines were slow and expensive to operate, so it was therefore important to reduce errors in the execution. In other words, for the computer to efficiently execute an order, one should diminish the margins of error. Due to this inbuilt fear of error, the control of the computer's executions became an integral part of the computer's functionality. This involved, in short, various procedures to structure and automate programming, and also so-called built-in checking, automatically verifying the functioning of the computer. So in other words, various types of bureaucracies and testing of female labor were what made the computer able to deliver outputs to any input, to function as a black box, so to speak, or a technological ready-made. Clearly, as John demonstrates, it is not merely code being executed, but a conglomerate of cultural behaviors that not least also involve the domestic role of female labor. There's a certain inner logic to the law of coding and execution. To the laws controlled by testing and checking the execution. And I'm using law here, perhaps more metaphorically, as a principle rather than a legal thing. But I think it's interesting to perhaps talk about the relationship between these logics of laws and the actual laws of the land, so to speak. So, I have plenty of time left, don't I? Yeah. So, some illustrative examples. Now, both computing, testing, and their inbuilt laws have become more complex since then. I'm cutting many corners in this history of testing. It's an ongoing project I have. I think the history of testing has not been written yet, and it's incredibly boring, but somebody has to do it. But I want to mention someone, Barbara Yates, who I came across. She's almost always forgotten, but to my knowledge, she was the first one to articulate some of the most common typologies in software testing. To exemplify how testers operate with different levels of access to and knowledge of a system's inner workings, she distinguishes between three layers. Black box testing checks the function of the system. It operates at the level of the user interface and it is used, for instance, in usability testing. White box testing checks the functioning, the inner functioning of the system. You have access to the source code to check its different units. For example, to check if a particular method in object-oriented programming is working correctly. And then you have gray box testing, typically to test a network, how it integrates to other networks. You use an interface and have partial knowledge of the system's operations without direct access. To give you an example, you could think of a terminal window which allows you to trace the route of data packages across the internet and identify delays. As an example, there's a command for that. So in the following, I want to present three brief examples of artists who use or rather misuse these testing techniques to expose the inner logics of the laws that govern our contemporary web of data. My first example is the artist Ben Grosser, who often examines the feed of updates and news that you that seem to have become an intrinsic property of social media interfaces and our endless scrolling. As revealed in his own writings and teaching methods and also in personal conversation, he typically begins by user testing, testing the interface of the black box by paying attention to its design mechanisms. How does a feed occur? What makes it happen? And so on. So when opening an account on Facebook, for instance, the interface does not have a feed until you begin performing certain desired actions, such as to share what is on your mind, your feelings right now, a photo from your computer, or a reaction to something. This is what leads to a kind of engagement-motivated algorithmic feed designed to reinforce new reactions. For instance, posting is typically associated with quantification, making the user prone to check and compete. Such awareness serve as inspiration or can serve as inspiration for performative actions that misuse the interface. Oh. So here are some examples from Ben Grosser's Facebook profile, where he documents the sort of compulsive behaviors that the interface encourages us to do, like turn on this, post something, show more, show less, like this, quantify something. And he's quite interesting to follow in that sense. So here's another example that's from some of his artworks. In one of the most famous ones, I think one that sort of made him famous in the world of net art, is called Facebook Demetricator, where he produced a browser extension that removes all metrics.
Which is a quite simple thing to do, actually, but it actually works. So if you apply it, it will remove all metrics from your interface. More recently, he also created a whole new social media platform called Minus that counts down rather than counts up. So users only have 100 posts, and the interface clearly exposes this property of sort of a reversed quantification. I think Grosser's black box testing seems to expose the logic of what we might call a law of use. Within what we consider good and user-friendly design of social media lies a design of the user, a user designed to deliver more posts, more data, more shares, more videos, a logic that Grosser sees as intrinsically related to digital capitalism. My next example. In the work Bittercoin, the worst miner ever, Cesar Escudero Andaluz and Martin Nadal address Bitcoins and blockchains, a phenomenon that's often associated with this shift from a web of documents to a web of data. What happens in a blockchain is incomprehensible to most people. Literally, adapting a test of the inner functioning of blockchains, Nadal and Andaluz have reverse engineered Bitcoin mining and redesigned a unit that validates the blockchain to see how it performs and make it perform extremely poorly. You may know that you can get Bitcoins the same way as you get other kinds of currencies. You can, for instance, buy them for dollars or accept them as payment for goods or services. However, Bittercoin highlights how Bitcoins take up time to produce, how they function as a commodity and not just a currency. In broad terms, they are produced by rewarding the time and labor put into validating blocks of transactions in a system. So by making it artificially difficult to do this, the system avoids inflation. So to validate a transaction in a distributed network, or to mine Bitcoins as it's called, it takes an average 10 minutes, I think at the time I wrote this, and an immense computational power, an estimated 72,000 gigawatts. So in Bittercoin, the process of validation is slowed down, or the computational power is replaced by actual labor time, to use a Marxist term. By letting an old and weak calculator do the mining, they increase labor time into the absurd. It will take the calculator approximately 11 million years to mine one Bitcoin. With this, they make us aware that despite something seemingly immaterial as Bitcoins, or presented as a pure currency, behind this there's a dirty factory in the form of farms that are typically located in Southeast Asia that employ real people and consume vast amounts of energy. So Nadal and Andaluz white box testing point to how the functionality of blockchains rests on the redistribution and also extraction of labor. One might also begin to speculate how these inner mechanisms underpin existing divisions of labor and maybe even with post-colonial undertones. So my last example is The Hidden Life of an Amazon User by the Catalan artist Joana Moll. She picks up on how the web of data redefines use and labor, but add to that, she has a particular attention to its environmental impact, something that's also present, I think, in Andaluz and Nadal's works, but more so in Joana Moll's work. So just to give you a bit of technical insights that you're maybe familiar with, but behind any web page lies a hypertext markup language, HTML, that displays the page in a browser. You can simply reveal this by opening the browser's inspector. HTML is a rather static text, so to add dynamic capabilities on the web page, it integrates so-called scripts. So say you want to buy a book on Amazon, you enter the details of your order, how many books do you want, your address, your credit card, etc. So what you're now using is what's called a common gateway interface that is scripted to transmit information between the browser and the server. Amazon.com is in fact therefore not just an HTML page, but rather an incomprehensible conglomerate of scripts that monitor the user's activity and structures the site's content accordingly. Amazon calls this, and I quote, constantly listening to customers to enhance and improve the customer experience. But evidently, one may question this scripting in other ways. In her performative work, Joanna Moll performs what she calls an autopsy. She purchases the book, The Life, Lessons and Rules for Success, The Journey, The Teachable Moment and 10 Rules for Success, cultivated from the life and wisdom of Jeff Bezos. I'm not kidding, it's called that. It's one of these sort of auto-generated books that are sold on Amazon sometimes. But she buys this from Amazon's website. But she also documents how she must go through 12 different pages to do this, how they add up to a total of 8,724 pages of printed code, containing 1,307 different requests to all sorts of scripts. And she reveals not the functioning, nor the function, but the terrifying scale of a web of data and the consumption of energy it uses. One can easily envision the effect this has on the climate. So to conclude, how do I conclude on this? What I have tried to argue is that there are laws that govern our digital reality, and they do so in different ways and work on different levels. These are not separate. So when you act as a user, you set in motion a system that has a function, but also a functionality in which it integrates to a wider network. Similarly, your execution is governed by laws of use, of labor, of extraction of resources, and depend on different logics of, for instance, behavioral capitalism, colonial exploitation, and the exploitation of land and resources. So such laws can be difficult to see. We only feel them. But I do believe that contemporary net and software art serve a purpose. They are capable of exposing these laws. I think Grosser and Andalus, Nadal and Moll, and a number of other artists that I work with demonstrate how we can give these laws some kind of visibility. It allows us to sort of assess and test not the function nor the functioning or the operations in a more critical way, and they also do so in different levels. I think that's also interesting to me, and so that you can sort of work with them without having full access to how machine learning works or how blockchain works. You can still access it. You can still see how the logic operates. And I think there's something to be learned from net and software art in this respect that sort of also goes beyond the art world, so to speak. Yeah, this is all I had to say. Thank you very much.